past adoption, I can see somewhat of a legacy going on because I was in home and I was in life. But in January and February, we elicited nominations from local superintendents of schools for test of evaluators. These evaluators were drawn largely from teaching staff, but also from college and university faculty, from parents. Anybody can be a textbook evaluator. If you would like to serve in this function, then contact your local superintendent of schools and say, please, next social studies adoption, I would like to be a textbook evaluator. You can ask. You may not be chosen. Evaluators are chosen very largely from teaching staff and from educational administration staff. But everybody has a choice. So get your name in. These names are sent to our superintendent, Dr. Jack Hagan. He channels these names on down to the curriculum areas which are coming up for adoption. And we choose possibly 8 to 10 evaluators per curriculum area. Say, for mathematics, there was Algebra 1, Algebra 2, General Math, Geometry, all of those committees, and I would say total of about 88 evaluators for mathematics and health. And then the subcommittees have about 8 to 10 on each subcommittee. Then in January, we sent out an invitation to textbook publishers to submit these textbooks in math, health, and dictionary if they would like to have adopted. And these textbooks are sent to the evaluation subcommittees for study. We train the evaluators to evaluate textbooks using published criteria for selection, which have been compiled by each curriculum area. And here again, you need to make your wishes known. These textbooks that are evaluated by the criteria, which are drawn up by curriculum areas, most of those criteria have a statement, something that is used to evaluate and decide whether or not the textbook should be on the recommended list or should be off the recommended list. One of those criteria is invariably treatment of minorities, especially in social studies. But you probably need to get more specific about which minorities. Those criteria will be hashed and threshed out in the Department of Education for the social studies area, probably beginning in 1988. That's why I say it's not too soon. The textbooks are also evaluated with the standard of learning correlation to that textbook, always in the mind of the evaluator, always. The evaluators were assembled this past July for 9 days in the heat of summer in Stanton, Virginia at the School of Deaf and Blind, where textbooks were gone over with a fine-tooth comb. The subcommittees interacted. They bounced ideas off each other. They decided then and there whether or not it was a quality textbook that they had in hand, whether or not that textbook had errors, whether or not that textbook correlated to the standards of learning, whether or not that textbook correlated to the criteria for selection that had been drawn up to evaluate. 88 evaluators. They also assembled to hear publishers present their products. Publishers have to make money. So publishers are going to present something that will sell. They have to first please the big states. They have to please California. They have to please Texas. These states do not have options be aware sometime around the middle of November to look for a notice of public hearing. We would be delighted if you show up and present. Everybody has 5 minutes generally to present. And publishers show up at the public hearings too. Sometimes textbooks are challenged at public hearings. Sometimes that can be a very exciting event. So be aware of those. Then the Department of Education, and I'm in charge of this, I present summaries of public hearings and the challenges to the Board of Education, who takes these summaries and these concerns, the challenges from the publishers, and then they compose a final list of adopted textbooks. The Board exercises final approval on all textbooks. Textbooks are part of the Virginia Code. Textbook adoption is statutory. But textbook adoption is on the Code of Virginia and it comes to a large part of the Board of Education regulations. I was going to mention two people that you should address concerns to within the Department of Education. Dr. Thomas Elliott, E-L-L-I-O-T-T, who is Director of Humanity and Secondary Administration. He was in charge of the last social studies adoption. He has moved up a notch, and now the Associate Director in charge of social studies is Mr. Harvey Carmichael. You can address your concerns to both of these people. Harvey will be in charge of the criteria for social studies. And Dr. Elliott could address your concerns. The Department of Education is very sensitive to public opinion, so I urge you to write letters. They won't go unheeded or unanswered. And I'd like to inform you that you are not Indians, you are Native Americans. In doing the research on bias in textbooks, I had gotten off my subject and I've got all this research together on bias in textbooks, and I've read this book, Textbooks at the American Indian. I hardly recommend it to you. There is an extensive detailed study on 39 Virginia social studies textbooks that was done by two professors from UPI. I was going to quote that study in great detail. I don't have time to do it.
You'd be but happy to put it in your conference appendix.
I was going to suggest that you do that. But you are not. Indians is a misnomer. You are Native Americans, and that's what a lot of the research has borne out. Thank you.
It looks like I'm that mean old lady today, but we really have had a jam-packed program, and I do apologize to anyone where we have not given you proper time. But this is the first occasion we're trying to cover many, many bases, and we will be happy to put anything in the appendix of the conference compilation. And certainly, I would love for this to have been a 3-day conference, and maybe the one thing we're learning is
we have next on our program a North Carolina Indian alumni and a professor at Pembroke State University. He is a professor of American Indian Studies there, and we've asked him to share with us for 15 minutes this afternoon some of the things we have done in that community. Really set history right. He's very proud to have you here.
Thank you, Dr. Sherbeck. I'd like to begin with textbooks. Write your own text. What you're waiting on. The textbook commission is highly political in any state in the union. Highly political. Write your own text. I'm not trying to contradict anything the fine lady states. She's he told you, you know, to get your word in. You don't get it in, it's your own fault. And I know Indians, generally speaking, don't have much political power. It might be necessary that you take all the bad books that speak out against Indians and pile them up in a pile, you know? What you do with them from there on, I don't know. I'll tell you what I think. I came up in World War II. Well, I was a college graduate at the end of World War II. I attended Pembroke State University for Indians, where my grandfather, W.L. Moore, was the founder of that institution. I got my basic training over here at Fort Eustis, wherever it is, you know. And I'd never been away but three nights in a hotel or a motel in my entire life. Okay? Now that's what you... That's really, you know, you've been nowhere except home, okay? Now, I tell you this because when I went into service, people asked many questions about Native Americans. I didn't know anything to tell them. So, sometime after returning, well, 1975 to be exact, that's a long time after World War II, I decided that we needed a good history book on the Lumbee people. The only land I know is that book, the best out on the Lumbee, which I was given. So, with my co-author David Eliades, I am proud of that contribution because our history was never told only in a prejudiced way. Never. Absolutely never. The Lumbee tribe is the largest tribe east of the Mississippi, the largest non-federally tribe in the United States, largest non-federally recognized tribe in the United States. 60,000 strong, and probably one of the more progressive tribes in the country, if you want to consider the white man's word, economics, entrepreneurship, and so forth. We have never signed any treaty with the government. Our history is somewhat cloaked in mystery. There's no doubt about it. The lost colonies migrated at least some finally into Robeson County, and they were there by at least the 1650s. Maybe some came the power conflict, but all of them did. We have more than 41 names among our tribe today that appears on John White's lost colony. We fought in the American Revolution. We fought in the War of 1812. By 1835, the white man tried, at least, to disenfranchise the Lumbee people. And let's just say Lumbee, we've had several names. We were known as the Freudian Indians from 1885 to 1911. We were known as, that was based on the Lost Colony Group, we were known as a Cherokee from 1911. No. We were known as Indians of Robeson County from 1911, 1913, 2 years. We were known as Cherokee from 1913, 1953, 40 years. And in 53, we were designated as the Lumbee by the state, and in 56, Lumbee Indians of North Carolina by the Congress of the United States. And our institution, Pembroke State University, changed its name accordingly. Freudian Normal School, Indian Norma School, Cherokee End and Norma School, Pembroke State College for Indians. That's what's on my diploma. Then we deleted the four Indians and we integrated Pembroke State College and then Pembroke State University. And today we are one of the 16 constituents of the University of North Carolina. And there's some talk about changing the name to University of North Carolina at Pembroke. Well, I don't know what will happen with that. But educationally speaking, we've done quite well from the time of my grandfather W.L. Moore, who could quote the four Gospels word for word. That's in his obituary, 1931. We have sergeants, captains of the Navy, colonels. We've never had an admiral or a general. We're still working on that. We haven't learned the white man's politics yet enough for this. You know, it's political after you get to that group. But you can go on your own a long way, and that's what we've had many of our people to do. I believe I said we fought in the American Revolution, the War of 1812 and 1835. The white man tried to disenfranchise. And then the Civil War came along, and at the latter part of the Civil War, 1864, and during Reconstruction, up until 74, we had a man who came along and did a lot for us, and he did it in a violent way. He did it in a killing way. And he's our number one hero of all time. It was necessary to have a Henry Barry Lowry. We don't need one today. But it was necessary to have a Henry Barry Lowry, at least the time that he reigned. We don't know what happened to him. The biggest reward we've ever had in the state for any man, alive or dead, living or dead. But no one ever collected a cent for his body. That little poem that says, Henry Barry Lowry, where are you sleeping in an unknown grave? Does the grass grow over your body? Or the black waters flow with secret sounds through your bones? That will confuse mankind until the end of time. From everlasting to everlasting, you're the hero of an Indian people. Keep your secrets as you sleep. That is part of your greatness. Anyway, we do know in 1885, the North Carolina legislature passed an act which did two very important things. One was designated the people as Crow Dog Indians, and the other was to give them separate schools. And as a result of the separate schools section, we had our first separate school in 1887. We've been building on that ever since, beginning with 15 students. Today, Pembroke State University is, well, my enrollment, I believe, is something like 2450. That's where I teach. About 650 Lundy people, 1450 Caucasians, and 350-400 blacks. I teach in the only building in the world that once housed a four-year college of liberal arts student body all in it. Only one in the world. Call it Old Main. She burned out of controversy in 73 and was restored in 1980. Perhaps some of you know my people as the Indians who crushed the Klan in 1958. You don't know that? Well, I'm telling you now, we did it, and they haven't been able to rise again in North Carolina since that day, and they never will. You'll get a hand on that. We don't have any Klansmen here. Okay? I'm quite proud of that. We had cablegrams for Russia, Soviet Union, England, all over the world when we crushed the Klan in 58. Another something I want to speak on, I teach an entire course in Lumbee History, and you can see why it's so difficult to put everything in 15 minutes. That is economic side. And I find that you Virginia people, you're not interested in becoming federally recognized. And surely the Mattapani and the Pamunkey could win recognition that quick. But you don't want to put those I talk with, you know. That's all right. I don't care if we never get it. And we are petitioning the government right now for federal recognition. Five ways, as you know, the legislative route, the presidential route, the route of the court and treaties, congressional, I said legislative. What two did I leave out, Helen?
You say executive.
What? Presidential. Yeah, I said presidential. Petition, I left that out. Well, anyway, we're involved in that. Now, if we get it, okay. If we don't, okay. I say to my people, buy back America. And I'm doing that, trying all I can. At least I'm able to go to some agents and say, I want to borrow $1 million or $2 million, and I'm able to get it. We must determine our own destiny through economics. That doesn't mean you destroy your herd. But you have to become economically independent. As long as you have to go to this man and this man and this man to feed your family, to send them to school, you're going to have one very difficult task. So I say to you, be prepared to do your own thing. Write your own history. Get enough politics, or at least convince someone, although you're in the minority, that you got a good case, and historically speaking, you have the facts, and if this country is going to live up to what it's supposed to be, great, then you should have no problem, if you're dealing with good people, getting your history into the textbook. That's up to you. Nobody's going to do it for you. You've got to walk it alone. Politically speaking, not many of you, under 200 here and there, it's not like 60,000. No man, no politician ignores the Lumbee politics. Anybody from Raleigh will say, well, what about Lumbee? Harry Sampson, right here. Harry Sampson was always interested in, well, what about the Lumbees? Where are they? Do we have them on our side? I might say, yeah, he had us on his side. He wasn't crazy this week either. He knew what he was doing. Get involved in politics. Get involved in economic determination. Children in church. You didn't expect that from me. Keep your children in church every Sunday. Even if you're agnostic, it will pay. You decide to let your children stand bed and sleep on Sunday morning. Maybe you're in church or maybe you're doing the same thing. You're making a mistake because basically, the church has something good to offer to us, to you, and we should be very much involved. more minutes, right. Well, I'll conclude my few remarks by saying, come to see us. People come from all over the country to visit Lundy Land. One Cherokee from the West said, I'll go back and tell my people how well the Lundy people are doing. You want to know? You ask people like Vine Deloria Jones. That's Bob Thomas. That's some of the leading ministers in the country. They tell you the same. By the way, we have more Baptists than Methodists. Now, that's one thing I don't like. We're about close to 7,000 Baptists and a little over 2,000 Methodists. And the Methodists are split into two groups, what we call the Lundy Methodists, officially known as the Lumber River Holiness Methodists, and the White Methodists, I sometimes call them, who are part of the United Methodist Church of the North Carolina Conference. And we've done well with the church, too. At one time, I headed up the American Indian Committee of the United Methodist Church. And I brought $100,000 into Robeson County with the help of others for Lundy voter registration and civic education. And the Lundy people elected a county commissioner who's been in for 20 years, a white fellow. And in 10 years' time, we control the board of commissioners. Right now, we have the majority. The Lundy people have the majority of the Board of Education of Robeson County. So we're very much involved. We're on the move. We don't take no for an answer. And anything we go for, if it's possible, we achieve that goal. And don't forget, bye-bye.